From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Wednesday. That's right, hump day, September 7th, 2016. We are so honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. And hey, shout out to Current State. How about Mark Bayshore and the Current State crew broadcasting live from the front lawn of the Michigan Capitol Building? Very cool stuff. So we now transition from politics to sports, and we've got a great hour of sports talk in store for all of you out there. On today's show, we will bring to you our coverage from last night's Crosstown Showdown. That's right, the 10th annual matchup between the Lansing Lugnuts and the Michigan State baseball team. It was a fun one, folks, as for the first time, the game was preceded by a home run derby. Yeah, and it was pretty fun, folks. So we'll have coverage from that. You'll get to hear from John Schneider, who is the manager of the Lansing Lugnuts, as well as the head coach of the Michigan State baseball team, Jake Boss Jr. You don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about the latest college football rankings. Where does Michigan State and Michigan sit when it comes to the Associated Press poll, as well as the coaches poll? And hey, get this, Ezekiel Elliott, former Ohio State running back, now with my Dallas Cowboys. He won't face any criminal charges concerning a domestic violence incident that occurred not too long ago. So we'll talk about that. And also the Detroit Tigers, they had a tough outing against the Chicago White Sox yesterday. All of that and so much more. You know that number to call if you want to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, let's talk about those college football rankings, shall we? Michigan State checks in at number 8, up 3 spots on the USA Today coaches poll that was unveiled yesterday, but stays at number 12 on the Associated Press Top 25. Now, Michigan, which beat Hawaii 63-3 on Saturday, moved up 2 spots in both polls to number 5 in the AP Top 25 and number 6 in the coaches poll. This is the first time Michigan has been ranked in the top 5 in the AP poll since the 2007 preseason poll before App State pulled off the biggest upset at Michigan Stadium. Alabama, Clemson, Florida State, and Ohio State are the consensus top 4 teams in both polls. Former Maryland basketball coach Gary Williams will welcome Tom Izzo to his place in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame this weekend. Now, the hall released its list of presenters on Friday at the Springfield Symphony Hall in Massachusetts. All inductees must be introduced by a current Hall of Famer, and the choice is solely the decision of the incoming Hall of Famer. Williams, who won 668 games as a college coach, including the 2002 National Championship, was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2014. Izzo's fellow inductees will be introduced by such notables as Bill Russell, Julius Erving, Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson, and Bill Walton, among others. And included in that class, along with Izzo, are Shaquille O'Neal and Allen Iverson, among others. Very cool stuff and big names. During a Facebook Live chat with Sports Illustrated last week, Michael Phelps was asked if his 16-week-old son, Boomer, will take after his mother, Phelps' fiance Nicole Johnson, to attend USC. Without hesitation, Phelps said, quote, "Boomer's going to Michigan. Go Blue," end quote. Now, Phelps lives in Arizona and will be a volunteer assistant coach at Arizona State. He said Boomer spends a lot of time in the pool taking after his dad. Phelps, 31, racked up 5 gold medals in the Rio Games last month to give him 23 for his career and 28 total medals. He reiterated that he is done competing. Say it ain't so, Mike. All right, Christian Williams slugged a 2-run homer And the Lansing Lugnuts topped the Michigan State Spartans 4-1 in the 10th annual Crosstown Showdown, presented by Auto Owners Insurance, before a crowd of 8,432 last night at Cooley Law School Stadium. Now, the annual exhibition game was played for the first time in September after being postponed in the spring. Prior to the game, the two teams held a home run derby with three players from each team taking part: Connor Panass, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., representing the Lugnuts, and Marty Bashina, Zach McGuire, and DJ Durkin participated for the Spartans. Panass belted 14 homers in the first round to lead all sluggers, while Durkin advanced from the MSU contingent with 10 round trippers. Now, in the championship round, Panass again proved too much, out-homering Durkin 14-10. Miguel Gonzalez's first start since August 11th not only helped his current Chicago White Sox team, but it also lent a helping hand to his previous Baltimore Orioles squad. Now, the righty hurled 6 1/3 innings of six-hit ball in his return from the DL due to a right groin strain, shutting down the Tigers in a 2-0 victory at a muggy U.S. Cellular Field on Tuesday night. Now, Baltimore cruised past the Tampa Bay Rays 11-2 and grabbed sole possession of the second American League wild card spot, with the Tigers now falling one game back. Anibal Sanchez could be making one of his final starts this season today against the Chicago White Sox. First pitch will be thrown right after we get off the airwaves at 2:10 p.m. Eastern Time. Sanchez, a possible candidate for a relief role, is 1-1 with a 3.60 ERA against the White Sox this year in four appearances and two starts. The city's attorney's office of Columbus, Ohio, will not press domestic violence charges against current Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. The office announced that today. Now, back in July, Deadspin discovered photos posted on Instagram by a woman that identified herself as Elliott's ex-girlfriend. Now, the photos showed injuries sustained from what she described as repeated domestic abuse by Elliott. We'll have more on that story in just a minute. Colin Kaepernick on Wednesday, today, thanked the public for making his jersey, get this, the NFL's top seller, numero uno, after his national anthem protest, and he vowed to donate all the proceeds he receives back into the communities. The San Francisco 49ers quarterback made his pledge in an Instagram post. Cap has not stood during the national anthem for the past two preseason games because he said he didn't want to show pride in the flag of a country that, quote, oppresses black people and people of color, end quote. We'll also have more on that story. And sad news for current sports engineer Isaac Constance, diagnosed with cancer. Yeah, LSU's live Tiger mascot, Mike, won't take the field during home football games this season, but will remain in his habitat instead. The university, in a news release on Tuesday, said that in light of Mike's recent terminal cancer diagnosis, no attempt will be made to load him into his trailer. Instead, officials say he'll be let out of his outdoor habitat early on game day so Tiger fans can see and visit him throughout the day. Oh boy, Mike, get well. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in, folks. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Here we go.
Throughout the process, you know, I think we're the only team in America that plays that the second week of the season and then plays a Power 5 team that next week. So there's not a lot to compare to that, but we'll use it as a positive. We'll get some guys, first of all, healthy. Secondly, Our players are really in school for the first time this week. You know, last week was a chopped up week, so they can get themselves grounded in that respect. Third, we can get out and recruit a little bit on the weekend. So that's a positive.
Ladies and gents, boys and girls, that is how we start this afternoon's WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. I trust that you all are having a great, great, great start to your week. It is Wednesday. Happy, happy hump day. We've got a great hour in store for all of our listeners out there on today's show. As I mentioned at the top, we will have coverage from last night's Crosstown Showdown. That was fun, I must say, folks. That was really fun because it had a different feel than other Crosstown Showdowns of the past. This was the 10th annual. And because it was the 10th annual, you know, the Luggies decided to do something special. The Luggies and the Spartans decided to do something a little bit special. And they actually had a home run derby before the start of the game at 7 p.m. The home run derby started at 5:30, and it was funny because I was walking to Cooley Law School Stadium, and I happened to get there around like 5:45, so the home run derby had started by the time I began walking up to the front of the stadium, and I entered through the back of it, though, and, you know, I could see the field before I got to the front entrance. And it was so crazy because I was like right in the line of sight when the home run derby was taking place. And you saw these incredible sluggers at the plate just bombing balls over the right fence, the left field fence, out in the center field. It was so cool to watch. And there was a moment where when I was walking up, because I'm right next to the street and their car's driving to try and find a parking spot to attend last night's game, and I believe it was Bo Bichette was at the plate, and Bo had smacked like three in a row to right field, right over the right field fence, and the balls actually were raining down into the street where the cars were driving. And I was just sitting there saying, oh my goodness. And I saw one car try and dodge one, which it was successful, you know. I don't think any balls, knock on wood, hit any cars last night, but there were some close calls, which I witnessed firsthand, all right? So they may need a bigger net out in right and left field next year, but it was a very cool event, to say the least, all right? And we will have coverage from the Crosstown Showdown later on in the show, but I want to start by talking about the latest rankings in the world of college football. You just heard from Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team. That was another snippet from yesterday's press conference as Coach D addressed the media at 11:30 a.m. at Spartan Stadium. And he talked about how Michigan State is the only team in the country that has a week two bye. And then again, they're thrown in the fire and they have to play Notre Dame right after that on the road, enemy territory, touchdown Jesus, the Fighting Irish, big game. Big game with really some heavy implications as the season rolls along after that game. Now, you know, I got a question, though, because these are some interesting rankings. When you look at the rankings and really evaluate them, as I mentioned in the Quick Hit Headliners, MSU, number 8, up 3 spots in the USA Today coaches poll, stays at number 12 in the Associated Press Top 25, in the AP Top 25. They remain at number 12. Michigan, who, of course, topped Hawaii. Now, Michigan State, they, even though they won, they beat Furman, but it was not a convincing win. It was 28-13. Many folks out there expected the Spartans to come out and produce more than that against a lower level of competition like the Paladins, all right? Michigan lived up to the hype as they beat Hawaii 63-3 on Saturday. They moved up two spots in both polls, to number 5 in the Associated Press Top 25 and number 6 in the USA Today Coaches Poll. First time the Wolverines have been ranked in the top 5 in the AP poll since 2007. And I know many U of M fans out there, that year rings a bell because that was the year that Appalachian State pulled off the biggest upset at Michigan Stadium. How could you forget that game, right? I know many people, many U of M fans out there are trying to, you know, put that game in the very back file of their memory. But nonetheless, I mean, Michigan, you know, it really impressive when you talk about polls. But hey, I want to say this, folks. Who cares about the Associated Press or USA Today coaches poll after week one of the college football season? Who really cares? It means nothing. It means nothing at all. So it really tickles my fancy whenever I talk to people about these preseason polls, and I immediately started to see messages from my fraternity brothers about Michigan State staying at number 12 in the AP poll. And they're like, why? You know, they did beat Furman. And I'm sitting there saying, well, who cares? These rankings from Saturday to Saturday, from week to week to week, are going to change so much because that's just how college football works, folks. And I must say, I love college football because even more so now than back in the BCS era, because every single week, you know, every single week is like a one-game elimination, to be honest with you all. I mean, if you lose one game to an opponent that you're supposed to beat, or if you don't beat that opponent by a certain margin that you're supposed to beat that opponent by, it can really hurt your chances at making the college football playoff later on down the line. It really can. That's why I love college football, you know, even more so than in the past now, because we live in a society where it's instant gratification. You want to see fans today, especially the younger generation, they want to see games that matter. And every week in college football, you are going to get to see just that. Because one loss could really hurt you down the road. And how many crazy games did we see this past weekend? I mean, I bring up LSU and Wisconsin. Sorry, Isaac, but I bring up LSU and Wisconsin. How crazy is that? That's going to hurt the Tigers, you know, playoff implications if Wisconsin does not continue to become a force to be reckoned with as the college football year rolls along. You know, I bring up Houston. I mean, how about Houston, you know, in Oklahoma? I mean, that was huge. Houston looks for real, folks. They look really, really good. Alabama. Hey, well, that wasn't even really close, though. I mean, Alabama, Jalen Hurts looked absolutely fantastic. Florida State, DeAndre Francois, maybe my favorite name in college football this year. Absolutely loved that kid. I mean, he was fantastic showing up Ole Miss and Chad Kelly. He made Chad Kelly look like the freshman in that game. And those are the type of games you are going to get to see on a week-to-week basis. And that's why polls go out the window. I mean, yeah, you know, you could have Michigan as a top 5 team right now, and you know, number 6 in the coaches poll. Now again, Michigan doesn't play a really hefty schedule that really challenges them, and not until later on in the year when they have to go on the road and try and beat the Spartans and of course the Ohio State Buckeyes. But with that being said, I mean, Michigan's rankings could change and it could fluctuate tremendously as the year goes on if they have a hiccup. Michigan State, same thing can be said for Michigan State. The same can be said for any team on both of these polls that you're looking at and saying, yeah, this team looks really good right now. That's why I don't pay attention to polls like that. You know, I don't start really looking at the polls until maybe like the middle of the year. Because then you can start to see, okay, how does the schedule stack up for some of these top tier guys at the very top of the poll? And what are the big games coming down the pike that could have implications as far as conference championships games are concerned? So I who cares? Week one, I don't care about a poll in week one. All right, folks. And I also want to bring up a few notable week two games. I mean, it's going to be another fun weekend of college football, folks. I mean, you got Well, you get UCF at Michigan. I think Michigan wins that one easily. Lamar at Houston. You got Charleston Southern at Florida State. Troy at Clemson. Tulsa at Ohio State. Nevada at Notre Dame. Many Michigan State Spartan fans are going to be watching that Nevada at Notre Dame game because, hey, it's scout time. I'm sure Mark D'Antonio and his coaching staff are going to be glued to the television with notepads, pens, iPhones, smart tablets, whatever you want to call it. They're going to be there glued in and honed into that Nevada at Notre Dame game. It's going to be interesting to see how they compare that game, you know, to also the Texas game as well. It's a lot of footage to go through. A lot of footage to go through. But that game takes place at 3:30. You got Western Kentucky at Alabama, Louisiana Monroe at Oklahoma, UTEP at Texas, Jacksonville State at LSU, Iowa State at Iowa, Virginia Tech at Tennessee. So it's going to be another full plate of games on Saturday to really look forward to. And it's going to be a balancing act now for Mark D'Antonio. I mean, you know, again, you just heard the bite about Coach D, you know, having to really balance this early bye week. I mean, I don't know. I would love to, you know, when Mark D'Antonio has his press conference next week, I got to ask him. I mean, when it comes to how you approach practice now, seeing as though you don't have that cushion of having a week of rest, ideally in the middle of the year for your team to recuperate, how do you approach practice as the season goes along, let alone a game? I mean, well, in the game, you got to go all out. It's all about wins. You can't ease off the gas in a game. But to make sure that your team is fully healthy, and especially the fact that they don't have that mid-season week of rest, you have to really make sure that the contact is very minimal as the year proceeds. So, folks, what do you think about the week 2 bye? What do you think about Michigan State and Notre Dame? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Also, when it comes to polls, I have a brief rant here. I want to call out the Los Angeles Daily News writer, Mr. Scott Wolf. Would you please stand up? Because I just didn't understand how Michigan received a first-place vote in the preseason Associated Press Top 25. The Wolverines, they're coming off a 10-3 season. Jim Harbaugh's first year, they certainly improved when you compare that to the Brady Hoke era. But the fact that Michigan had at least one writer to say, hey, I think this is the best team in college football, that's mind-boggling to me. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people, including writers I see, that are really drinking the Kool-Aid when it comes to this Michigan Wolverines team. After week one, Wolf kept the Wolverines at number one after U of M 63-3 domination of Hawaii on Saturday at Michigan Stadium. Wolf was the only first place vote that the Wolverines received. Here's a quote from Wolf. He actually spoke to the Detroit Free Press via email and backed up his reasoning as to why he had the Wolverines as number one. Quote, I like their schedule, and I don't think they should face a big challenge until Michigan State, which they can win. And that leaves only Ohio State. He went on to write, this is via email, quote, most of all, I think the team has had a year under Jim Harbaugh and knows what he wants. His teams have a killer instinct I like, and I saw how Stanford improved under him. He also knows how to get teams ready for big games, especially when he beat Pete Carroll a couple of times at USC. Now that he is in year two, nothing Michigan does will surprise me this season. I looked at the combination of the early schedule and Harbaugh's history wherever he has gone and decided they were a top four playoff team. And then I factored in the presence of U of M defensive coordinator Don Brown, who I have known for 25 years, and decided that was the difference. I wrote about this on our website, tmgcollegesports.com. So I voted them number one, and they that they played their opener and won by 60 points. I move Alabama from 3-2. I think it would be more unusual if I had dropped my number one team after they had won their opener by 60, and it's a weekly poll. What did Michigan do wrong last week? Allow a field goal? End quote. So again, that's from Scott Wolf, LA Daily news writer, who was the only first place vote that Michigan received in this week's Associated Press Top 25. Now, I just stated, I don't put too much stock in polls. I could care less about polls. But when it comes to Mr. Wolf's reasoning as to why he decided to vote for the Wolverines as the top college football team in the nation, I just didn't get it. I didn't understand. It's more so, if you evaluate what I just read in the email to the Detroit Free Press, it's more so that Wolf was speaking off of Jim Harbaugh's history and not proof in the pudding as to what he's currently seeing from this team when you take into account last year into this year. Hawaii, you beat them by 60 points. You're supposed to do that. It's Hawaii. It's something that Michigan State honestly should have done against Furman, but it didn't happen. But I just don't understand, when you look at the entire college football landscape and you look at the other teams out there, especially Alabama, which in my opinion looks unbeatable right now. I mean, it's not even fair what Alabama has done in recent years. And they looking at their first game, they haven't missed a beat. But I just don't understand how you can vote for Michigan as number one this early in the year. Riddle me that, folks. Riddle me that. Before we hit our first break, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer who is so valiantly trying to fight this sickness off. Isaac Constance, I hope you're feeling better, my man. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing good. Went to the doctor this morning, actually, and you hear me? My voice is a little bit higher pitched, like I was saying. Not really good for first day of classes when you're trying to make a good impression. But I think that overall, Michigan, if you vote for them in week one, you have every right to vote for them in week two. But the problem I have is there's no reason to vote for them in week one, because Ohio State is the best team in the Big Ten. I think that's inarguable. I think there's no debate based on the team's success last year.
I agree.
And
yeah,
what they did this year.
Now, you can maybe make an argument for Iowa as well, though. Iowa's fantastic. I think Iowa's going to come out, you know, the other division in the Big Ten to play in the Big Ten championship game again. Now, granted, you know, if you look at, you know, the division that Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan plays in, I mean, they're all going against each other. So, but yeah, I see where you're going with
that,
though. Yeah,
based off recent success, you've just got to pick Ohio State or Iowa. That's a decent pick. But Michigan can be right outside that top five. I'm cool with that. But the number one team in the nation is clearly, without doubt, everybody's mind is set on Alabama. There's no dispute whatsoever, especially after that week one romping of USC. Mm-hmm. You can't argue the fact that this Alabama team, with their sustained success, with their recruiting class, you talked about a freshman at QB doing what he's doing right now and tallying up the numbers on a team like USC. There's no debate that between that defense, this flashy offense, Alabama's the best team in the country. Then Clemson. You got Deshaun Watson, rather, who's coming back, Heisman candidate, front runner. Then you've got Oklahoma in week one, goes down to Houston. Houston now is a serious contender for one of those top five spots. There are just so many teams who didn't play Hawaii in week one. Mm-hmm. And Hawaii should not reaffirm your status. It's expected. If Michigan ends up being the best team in the country or something close to it, good for him for picking that. But you know what? Even in that case, that defies logic. That's because the rest of the college football nation lets you down. That's because we didn't get the right information on this team, because everybody's seen something which isn't. Just like I called MSU beating Furman, I said people were being too kind with their 48-3 picks. Mm-hmm. I said 56-3. And you know what? That's what should have happened. I was wrong. But at the same time, that's not my fault. That's Michigan State's fault for going out there and playing a poor game of football. This is the same thing. Whereas if Michigan's able to accomplish attaining a number one seed or the college football playoffs, that goes against the grain. It's not what should be expected.
Yeah, I agree. And again, Mr. Wolf, you can do whatever you want with your vote. I mean, it's your vote. But I was curious to read that article and to see what his reasoning was behind why he decided to vote for U of M as the number one team in college football. And there were a few interesting tidbits in that email that really spoke to, and I hate to say this about, you know, any journalist out there, but the you know, when he brought up, quote, "And then I factored in the presence of U of M defensive coordinator Don Brown, who I have known for 25 years. I'm going to stop right there. That sounds to me like a little bit of bias there, Isaac. You know what I mean? I hate to say that when it comes to any journalist out there, and I'm pretty sure Wolf for him to be voting in this poll in the first place, he's an accredited journalist. But to put that in your reasoning, I would have left that out. I would have just said, hey, Don Brown, he's fantastic. Cool. I like the team a lot because Don Brown is a great defensive coordinator, blah, blah, blah. But you know, I have known him for 25 years. He could have left that out. You know what I mean? There's a bit of bias, and he's more so speaking on Harbaugh's history and not speaking in, and not really backing up points as to why U of M right now on September 7, 2016, right now they are the best team in college football. So I don't know, folks, what do you think? Do you think U of M is the best college football team in the land right now? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will shoot to our coverage from Cooley Law School Stadium, home of the Lansing Lugnuts, and, of course, host of last night's Crosstown Showdown as the Luggies took on the Michigan State baseball team. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Before we shoot to our coverage from last night's Crosstown Showdown between the Lansing Lugnuts and the Michigan State baseball team, I want to bring this story up because I find it intriguing on many different levels. Ezekiel Elliott, former Ohio State running back, now with my Dallas Cowboys. He's a rookie. I actually just drafted Zeke on my fantasy football team in one of my leagues last night. Ezekiel Elliott finds himself climbing out of the hot water, so to speak. The city's attorney office of Columbus, Ohio, will not press domestic violence charges against the Cowboys running back. Now, back in late July, Deadspin discovered photos posted to Instagram by a woman that identified herself as Elliott's ex-girlfriend. Now, the photos showed injuries sustained from what she described as repeated domestic abuse by Elliott. Now, this story gets even more interesting because as of this morning, exactly at 11:19 a.m., Deadspin has published an article entitled "Witness Claims Ezekiel Elliott's Girlfriend Asked Her to Lie to Police," end quote. I want to read a small snippet from this article. It goes on to say this. Yesterday, the Columbus Prosecutor's Office announced that it would not be pursuing charges against Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, who was accused of committing domestic violence on five separate occasions by his girlfriend, Tiffany Thompson. Today, the Prosecutor's Office released documents related to the case, including witness statements, photographs, and text messages. All of these documents are embedded at the bottom of the page. Now, you can check this out online, folks, at deadspin.com. Continuing to read here, but the most notable, may be a sworn statement from a woman named Erin Mason, who claims she was with Thompson during the early morning hours of July 22nd, 2016, the day that Thompson called the police to report that Elliott had just assaulted her. And, you know, you can read the statement, and the statement accounts an incident that occurred and an altercation that occurred between Tiffany and another woman. And, you know, it goes on to even have screenshots of messages which were released by the prosecutor's office. And they're images that you can read as well. And it's really hard to tell who's saying what and when based on the images. But I will say this. When you evaluate the text messages, it does appear to show possibly Thompson asking Mason to lie to the police. If that is so, I will say this, folks, because we've talked about different incidents over time when it comes to athletes of a certain stature being involved in domestic violent situations and individuals who have been pressured to take back a story or a statement and decide to not press charges based on pressure from outside sources. All right. So one of the most recent incidences that kind of go into that conversation concerns the Baylor University football team that has a history of domestic violence upon women. And there have been a few stories in which women who have said to have been, you know, had some sort of sexual assault or domestic violence occurrence with one of the football players at the University of Baylor. One of those, a few of those women have actually come out and said that, yeah, we've been pressured by certain people to change our stories because of who these guys are, because they're football players. And again, there will be more that comes out about this in the coming days. But if that's the case, In this story, boy, oh boy, that opens up a whole nother can of worms. So I want to pose this question out to you all. Does this change your perception of Ezekiel Elliott at all? Because I must say, you know, even though he's a running back for my Dallas Cowboys, that aside, player aside, athlete aside, this does not look good. I must say that, folks. You know, I looked at Zeke as a guy. He was a heck of a running back with the Buckeyes. I mean, a lot of people remember Ezekiel Elliott. If you remember that Ohio State lost to Michigan State, and Ezekiel Elliott actually called out Urban Meyer and said that, hey, I should have gotten the ball more. Give me the ball. You know, that didn't look good upon his character. But at the same time, you know, he said he was sorry. You know, he regretted it. He's a very well-spoken young man. You know, that incident alone didn't even change my perception of Ezekiel Elliott. I've always looked at him as a hard-working, hard-nosed, blue-collar guy. But this incident with Ezekiel Elliott is just a small window into the world of many NFL athletes, heck, many athletes in general, when it comes to domestic violence. And it's something that should not be tolerated. And I encourage anyone out there, folks, if you have been through something like that, where you've been abused or involved in a domestic violence situation, don't be afraid to speak up and let your voice be heard. No matter who that person is, despite all the pressure in the world, do not be afraid to speak up, stand on your own two feet, and let the world know what this sick individual did to you. Simple as that, folks. I've always believed in that and always will. So I wanted to bring that story to the forefront because I'm sure many of you out there probably have thoughts and comments on that as well. And speaking of that, we actually have a caller on line one right now. We've got our good dear friend Jody from Canada on line one to talk about Zeke. Jody, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing?
Real good, man. Just a little brief thing about it. You know, any kind of domestic violence and putting your hands on each other is wrong. Don't get me wrong, okay? And I'm not going to say anything about that. You know, however, we have to realize that we are putting young men on pedestals because of physical abilities. You know, when you put a football player or a basketball player or a wrestler or whatever on a pedestal because of his physicalness, that's what they're known for. Not saying you're known for beating a woman, but what I'm saying is maybe we're honoring the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a football player, and, you know, my roommate used to tell me that, well, man, when you was playing every day, you used to be able to do this, or I used to be able to do that. You know, and you think about it and you think, well, maybe, you know, maybe we, you know, put Zeke on the pedestal because of his wanting to carry the ball, and in the clutch he took the ball and was, you know, ready to run down the field with it. But we really didn't know a lot about, you know, Ezekiel Elliott as a man.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Deuce OJ, same with a lot of the fellas, and not a lot, but some of the fellas come through, and, you know, we'll see the ones who do well and the ones who carry themselves well, but we won't, may not always see the others and the guys who, you know, might struggle with some, I don't want to call them mental issues, frustration, whatever we want to call those things, because what it is, it's always wrong to put your hands on anybody, especially a woman.
Now, it's interesting you bring it up, Jody, because that's another part of the conversation as well that we brought up constantly here on the show when it comes to football players. I mean, these are guys that, in their job title, are told to go out there and really bust somebody upside their head for a living, okay? Go out there and really be animals. Simple as that. I mean, the game of football is so physical. And then we say, all right, now you got to turn it off and go into the world, you know? And a lot of guys struggle with that. Struggling, you know, they struggle with really trying to harness that aggression in everyday life away from the gridiron. And, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with society as well. I mean, maybe we're celebrating, you know, the physical nature of what these athletes do on the gridiron maybe a little bit too much, and not just the overall greatness of what they do. You know, maybe we are folks, and that I think plays to the preconceived notion or the overall psyche of how we view athletes in general, and that's a whole nother realm. I'm no psychologist, but I think that speaks right directly to sports psychology.
Yeah, and what I found out in life, period, is in times of stress, we revert back to where we're the most comfortable. You know, and if we do that, by that I mean, if you know, you used to cussing somebody out when you get heated, you're gonna curse. If you're used to swinging or you're used to pushing or doing some of that, if you're not careful, you end up reverting back to that comfort zone of your actions. So, you know, a lot of times when you know, you look at it, you know, there was probably a lot more going on back, you know, 60s, 70s, not maybe a domestic violence, but, you know, outbursts, players fighting, and, you know, in the gym, even in the off season, you know, there might be a fight between, you know, one group of players and a fraternity or something like that. It used to go on in the 70s, you know, a little more, you know, because I guess, you know, it wasn't brought to the attention of the media as much, you know. But, you know, when you celebrate the physicality, or like you say, the physicalness of a person, you know, sometimes that, if you're not careful, you, that becomes, you know, not even who you are, but who you become. Because, you know, Elliot sounds all, everything, you know, reading about him and, you know, good family and laddie, all that stuff, sounds like a good guy, you know, but you wonder what actually is going on.
That is so true. Thank you so much, Jody, for that call. Appreciate
all right,
that.
Take care, Al.
You got it, my man. And I really hope that, and I think that Zeke has learned from this. You can't put yourself in this kind of position. And just, I just want to read one part of the text message. You can really draw your own conclusion here. Again, we don't know who's saying what, but I just want to read to you this back and forth. I'm going to read it right now. Quote, if they ask, he dragged me out of my car. Okay. And then another person says, okay, just now. Then another person says this. When we got here, like, we pulled up, he showed up, and he yanked me out if the police asked. Other person says, where are you? The other person says, sitting on the side of the road, where are you? Then the other person says this, do you want me to lie about what happened that night because Zeke's lawyer is about to call me again? Hurry, text me back. And the other person says, huh? Call me. Other person says this, what? Him pulling you out the car by your wrist? Then the person says, call me. And then it goes in this constant back and forth. But that text message, quote, do you want me to lie about what happened that night because Zeke's lawyer is about to call again? Hurry, text me back. You draw your own conclusions, folks. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Isaac, brief thoughts on that before we talk about the Crosstown Showdown?
Yeah, you know, whenever it's allegations or nothing concrete, it's always difficult to make too many assumptions. However, just like you said, it doesn't bode well for Zeke. We'll see where this develops. It actually looks like it might be at a dead end with Columbus police deciding not to press charges. So we will see if anything else transpires in this, but I think it's very possible we've seen the last of this.
And I think
like
so too.
You said, I mean, you draw your own conclusions about it.
Yep. Read it and draw your own conclusions. All right, folks. Well, on a much lighter note, last night, of course, the 10th annual Crosstown Showdown took place between the Lansing Lugnuts and the Michigan State baseball team. It was a fun outing, folks. I was there in person, and I got to check out the Home Run Derby, the very first Home Run Derby ever in Crosstown Showdown history, in which, man, Connor Panis put on a show. He out-homered Durkin 14-10 of the Michigan State baseball team. It was just fun just to watch that many homers in one setting. My very first Home Run Derby in person. And the annual exhibition game was, for the first time, played in September after being postponed in the spring due to rain. It was about 90 degrees. The sun was out. The birds were chirping. A lot of fans came out. The first 2,000 fans received the Lansing Lugnuts Michigan State baseball cap, and they were rocking them to no end yesterday. And in the end, the Lansing Lugnuts topped the Michigan State Spartans 4-1. But it is exhibition play, and you get more out of a game like this than just the final score, so to speak. So I chatted with the head coach of the Michigan State baseball team, Jake Boss Jr., as well as Lansing Lugnuts first-year manager, John Schneider. Starting with Jake Boss Jr., just asked him, I mean, how fun this moment truly is.
Yeah, a lot of fun. You know, they came up with the idea a while back and thought it would be a good idea. And I know our guys had a lot of fun with it. Something that we don't do a whole lot of, you know. And so to get our guys out there in that kind of atmosphere, and especially against, you know, the Lugnuts, and watching some of these guys let it fly was a lot of fun. So, yeah, I mean, great idea, and thankfully it went well.
That's cool. You know, whenever guys here, they get to see everything on TV at the big league level, and they kind of have it, you know, come to life for them right here was pretty neat. And Michigan State guys did great. Our guys did great. You know, the young pups, Vladdy and Bo, and Panis put on a pretty good show. So that was cool.
Yes, it was very cool. Now, John, I want to talk about the season for you guys. Now, I know it's in the books right now. No postseason for you guys. But to have an event like this, what do both squads get out of a game like this?
Well, I think for us, first and foremost, it kind of gives you an extra day to kind of take care of some stuff off the field, get your place in order, and kind of say your final goodbyes to the guys. You know, at this level, whenever the season's over and you don't make the playoffs, or if you are in the playoffs, whenever it's done, it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. So this is a little bit, you know, a slower goodbye for everyone, and I think that's a good thing. And for the Spartans, man, I think it's cool because these guys are aspiring to be up, you know, where my guys are. So it's cool for them to play in front of this crowd and, you know, kind of play against the competition that they're hoping to be at in the next couple of years. So it's a cool event for everyone, I think.
John, how would you assess your first year?
Mine personally, it was good and bad, and I think any manager can say that. You know, we went through some really good patches, some really rough patches. But overall, man, you finished two games under 500 and a little bit out of the playoffs. And with the turnover we had, I'm happy with the progress a lot of guys made. And at this level, that's the most important thing. Obviously, you hope to win a little more, but guys got a lot better up and down. We promoted a lot of guys up to the Florida State League. And overall, I think it was a pretty good success.
Yeah, John, you just hit on it. I mean, you kind of have to take it with a bag of salt because at the same time, you know, wins and losses don't tell the whole story. You guys sent a lot of guys up to the majors, and that's a win in itself.
No doubt. And I think when you think of the term player development, we're trying to literally develop these players to get better and reach their ultimate potential. And if we took the first step in doing that, you know, then it's, you know, our job is accomplished. So you got to take the good with the bad. You're going to lose some games that you think you should win, and you know, you're going to win some you thought you were going to lose. So that's kind of the nature of the beast here. But as long as the guys are getting better, man, we can go home and sleep well.
What's the best part of a night like this? And talk about the relationship that you and Coach Boss share.
It's cool because we both do it for the same reasons, I think. You know, he's doing it for the, you know, whenever you're a coach or a manager, you're in charge, you know, of young men, and you're trying to lead them on the field and off the field a little bit. So it's very similar what we do. I think that we do it because we love baseball. And, you know, we like being around the guys and being around the staff. So it's a cool thing. You know, I don't really call it work, the job that I do. But it's this event is cool in itself. And it's nice to see him and how he goes about his business with his guys, too.
Jake, I know you guys aren't in season right now. But what do your guys get out of an experience like this?
Well, it's a taste of pro ball for him, you know, and that's everybody's goal is, you know, to get to this level and then hopefully beyond. And so it's a good opportunity to see how guys, you know, at the professional level go about their business. We try to get here early and watch those guys stretch and watch them take batting practice and things like that, and just kind of the little nuances of the game. And, you know, and then on top of that, you get to play against them in front of a great crowd and great atmosphere. So, yeah, a lot of fun all the way around. Well, like I said, I mean, it's good for the community. It's good for the capital area. It's good for Michigan State, and you know, doing it in the fall, I think, is something that, you know, obviously brand new, but it's kind of a first look at our 2017 team, and so that part of it's exciting for us as we just get going. We've had three practices so far, so you know, it's a lot of the newness of it still, and doing it this early, I you know, we'll see how it goes, but I'm excited about it right now. I know our kids are fired up.
So with that being said, Jake, how much coaching do you do tonight?
Well, we kind of let him play a little bit tonight. You know, I want him to enjoy the game. But again, you know, I want him to, you know, we get everybody the green light as far as running is concerned. I want him to feel comfortable and get out and kind of put pressure on and see what happens. But, you know, we're going to throw a lot of guys. We're going to throw probably 10 guys tonight in seven innings. And so we're going to get a lot of guys some experience and some playing time. But at the end of the day, I want him to go out and play the game hard and play it the right way.
Ah, it was a great time last night at the Crosstown Showdown. And I will remind you all that later on this afternoon, you will get to see a visual report from moi. That's right. If you go to WKAR.org later on this afternoon, you get to see a visual report and some of the sights and scenes from last night's Crosstown Showdown. You don't want to miss that. I will also post it to our social media pages at Facebook.com/currentsports on my Twitter page at Al Martin, WKAR. And, yeah, and you should see it not too long ago from now. All right, folks. Well, it's our second break. We've got less than 10 minutes left in the show. We'll continue to take your calls, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We'll have an update from one of golf's best players ever, Tiger Woods, as he still tries to get back on the links. And we will talk about the Detroit Tigers. So we'll talk some Tigers when we come back, folks. All right? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Yo, yo, yo. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have less than 10 minutes left in the show. Let's go to line two right now. We've got our dear friend Ray from Indiana on. Ray, what's up?
Skipper, you have a good Labor Day?
Oh, it was fantastic. Got to see the fam and friends. Very relaxing, but ready to get back.
Well, what did you think of college football over that weekend?
How fun was that? That was, in my years of watching college football, that might have been the most entertaining week one I've ever witnessed. A ton of great games on the tube, a lot of games that came down to the wire, and a ton of games that can have a lot of implications as the year rolls along when evaluating who those top four teams should be.
I think the best game was that Notre Dame-Texas game.
Oh, my. Well, without a doubt. I mean, that went down to the wire. They go to overtime. Oh, so and that was actually the highest rated game.
How do you figure them taking back a 2-point play to take it overtime?
How odd was that, right? And you know, I will say this though, Ray, because I got to get this off my chest too. I think the college football's overtime procedures need to be revamped. I don't know if you agree with that, Isaac, but you know, these guys battle all game for 100 yards, and then you put them on the 20 and say, "Go do it." I don't know if I like that.
So you know, you think it should be the NFL strategy?
Yes.
No.
I think that's way more entertaining than just to say, all right, put them on the 20 and let's see who can match who. I don't know if I like that.
I think it's more dense. It's packed into a little bit. You get your scoring. Each team has a chance.
It's a cop-out,
in the NFL,
though.
Whoever scores first,
yeah, I like
half
that.
Of it's based off luck.
It's a coin toss. It's a cop out to put both teams on the 20 and say you got 20, just 20 yards to score. It makes it way more easier. I don't know. I just don't like it.
25, first of all,
yeah,
but
well,
at
that
the same
same
time,
thing.
No,
yeah, give or
if
take.
If you get a field goal, the other team's going for the touchdown. I think that maybe they could move it back to the 35. I think that would make more sense. But I think the premise and the base of college football's rules for overtime are so much stronger than NFL's.
I don't agree.
Have it on to 25 right now?
25.
Yeah, 25. Yep. Yeah, I thought it was a 20. But yeah, you shorten the field that much. It makes it a cop out for teams that are so good on both sides of the football to have to guard just 25 yards at the end of the day. I don't know.
If you have a solid defense, you should be able to stop them.
But 25 yards, though, Ray, that's not a lot. That's not a lot of yards,
dude. I know,
ain't
a lot, but I'm just saying the defense has got the advantage. You don't have that much room to move. The receivers don't have that much room.
If you got a good run game, if you got a balanced offensive attack, 25 yards is not insurmountable. That's all I'm saying.
What if you got a great defense?
At the same time, 25 yards is so short. It's such a small portion of the field that you're not really getting to see the true art of defense go to work in overtime. That's all I'm saying. And that I think takes away from the true essence of football. That's just my opinion.
The DB's only got 25 yards to be short. You know, they can't. It ain't like in the middle of the field.
Yeah, I hear. But regardless, it was a great game. Notre Dame and Texas went at it, and Notre Dame comes up on the short end of the stick. It was fantastic. It actually was the highest rated college football game throughout the entire weekend, and no brainer as to why.
I just got done jogging. What'd Tiger have to say?
Oh, Tiger Woods. Okay, to bring this story to our listeners out there, Tiger Woods plans to return to competitive golf next month. At the Safeway Open. How about that? And hopes to add two more events before the end of the year. So Woods, he's 40 years old, of course. He announced this news on his website that he does hope to play at Safeway. He's been taking his time, of course, with all the back surgeries. But we will finally see Tiger Woods return to the game of golf. I'm in the majority in saying this, though, Ray. Tiger will never be the same. And I think a lot of people will agree with that.
Where's that event at for next month?
Boy, I'm not even sure. It's the Safeway Open.
He also
hopes to play in the European Tour's Turkish Airlines Open in early November, as well as the Hero World Challenge in December. So I'm not sure where the Safeway Open is. We have to do a quick Google on that one, Ray.
Hey, I forgot to talk to you about the Spartans, man. They look shaky.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for the last 2 days. Yes, they did look shaky, Ray. Not a very convincing victory over a team that they should have beaten.
I'm afraid the Bullies might beat you this year.
And here we go. I tell you what, it is hard and impossible to draw hard conclusions after just week one of college football, though, Ray.
You're
so
right.
Hold your horses. Let's let this thing play out a little bit.
And just like Michigan, the Bullies playing these like six straight home games to start the season.
Yeah,
so they go on the road. How do you know how good they are when they're at home every game?
The question is, you don't. Simple as that, Ray. Don't sleep on Wisconsin. I will say that Wisconsin is a very good team. They proved that this past weekend at Lambeau Field against LSU. But at the same time, Michigan has a ton of home games before they even meet Michigan State. And I do believe that Michigan will be 7-0 when they meet against the Spartans on October 29th at Spartan Stadium.
Well, I think Wisconsin's got the defense to stay with Michigan, but the key is going to be, can Wisconsin quarterback take away those turnovers that he had against LSU? Because there's no way you're going to go in the Big House and stay competitive with him if you start turning the ball over.
Exactly. And that matchup will be on October 1st. So.
And then, you know, Colorado and Central Florida, I know Central Florida is a 35-point underdog.
Mm-hmm.
I think they won 38-0. And Colorado come off an impressive victory. So it'll be interesting to see if the Bullies can pull this off against a couple teams that are a little more decent than Hawaii.
And I do believe that Wilton Spate, the starting quarterback for the Wolverines, is going to continue to get better. I must say that as well, Ray. He looked, again, he came out, threw an interception on his first play as the Michigan starter. But he settled in very nicely as that game went along.
What do you think about Ohio State? They get a pick, and then they score 77 straight points.
Exactly. Again, that's just pregame jitters, if you ask me. JT Barrett settles in, and bam, Ohio State is really, really good. And I don't think a lot of people are – it's funny because not a lot of people are talking about the Buckeyes. They're kind of flowing, you know, kind of flying under the radar because U of M and Jim Harbaugh had just completely dominated Big Ten talk.
You know what Urban Meyer said?
Was that?
This may be the most talented team he's ever had.
Yeah, exactly, right? And really nobody's talking about
it. If you were a betting man, even as good as the Bullies looked, would you take Alabama or Ohio State or Michigan?
I got to go to Ohio State. Ray, we only got 15 seconds though left. Thanks so much for the call.
All right, buddy.
All right, you got it. Hey, folks, same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Hey, be easy, people.